This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Out in front for Scheifele, hopped over his stick. Line A, taken off the puck. It's a two-on-one the other way. Burns, down the right wing boards. Burns, near side, Pavelski, a shot, he scores. Joe Pavelski wins it in overtime for San Jose. They do so shorthanded, and San Jose wins their first game of the year against the Jets. The final score, the San Jose Sharks 3, the Winnipeg Jets 2 in overtime.
That was from Tuesday night, the Sharks defeating the Winnipeg Jets. The Jets out on the road now. Thursday night's defeat in Montreal was one of the most lopsided games of the season for the Winnipeg Jets. The Canadiens hammered the Jets by a 5-2 margin. It was a perfectly average week for the Winnipeg Jets standings-wise. One win, which was last Saturday, the demolishment, which isn't a word, of the Anaheim Ducks.
It should be.
It should be. Doesn't demolishment sound like a good word? Like,
yeah.
I mean, you don't demolish team, but like you demolishmented a team.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate you trying to pick me up for my poor grammar. Tuesday night's overtime loss to the San Jose Sharks, and then the aforementioned defeat on Thursday to the Montreal Canadiens. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba, and for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app. We say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. We have 3 hours of hockey talk for you bright and early on this Saturday morning.
Yep.
As the Jets and the Senators will do battle, 1 o'clock puck drop. You can hear it live on this station. A matinee affair in Canada's capital. Good morning to you both, gentlemen. Nice to see you, Ezzy.
Straight
from an airplane,
yep.
Landed right here. Nice to see your dedication.
Yeah, had a nice little family trip this past week in Arizona, boys, but I would never miss a Saturday show. And I miss these 7 o'clock shows. We used to do these shows.
Hang on.
I'm a dad now, Drew.
I know you're dad now, but I'm a father, too.
And we're fresh off the 10th anniversary show.
Yeah, so there's
some escapades.
Yeah, I mean, I don't miss a 7 o'clock show.
I actually don't mind it now. I mean, it's completely different. Anybody who has kids out there knows that when you have kids, you get up whenever your kids get up,
yeah.
Right? So, I mean, if this was 3 or 4 years ago, I mean,
I wouldn't be here.
I wouldn't be here because I'd probably be on the floor of a bar.
Yeah.
But, I mean, now that I get up usually at, 6 o'clock, this is fine.
Yeah, I know. But there's still something nice about easing your way into the
sure.
day, I would suggest.
Well, I mean, 9 o'clock is just, that's when IC comes on. That just feels right, right? But anyways.
Dave, you don't have kids. How are you on this miserable Saturday?
I'm exhausted.
You were out till 3 a.m.
Oh, something like that.
I know. You're a bit of a night owl, so these early mornings are a little bit difficult for
you. Jim, Troy, and Brandon do it 5 days a week. They get up earlier even.
They're better men than we are. There's never been a comparison about that. I don't
Especially
know how those
Brandon.
Guys do that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Brandon, way better. Jim and Troy, I mean, we'll put them off to the side there, but Brandon is numero uno. Let's talk about the Winnipeg Jets week that was. Of course, we mentioned this morning they get a chance for redemption this afternoon against one of the worst teams in the NHL in the Ottawa Senators, a team that puts the dysfunction in dysfunctional. So let's go back to Thursday night. That was probably one of the most one-sided defeats the Jets have suffered all season long. It started well. They jump out to a 1-0 lead early with Scheifele's goal 5 minutes into the game. And then, really, from there on, it was the Habs speed and tenacious forecheck that I thought that just had the Jets confounded for the next, 50 or so minutes. Obviously, the Jets get the late goal by Brendan Lemieux that's just, a little bit of window dressing. But Paul Maurice, spoke about it. He said the coach was bad, the team was bad, the food was bad. Hopefully, the plane works on its way to Ottawa. But it was a bad night for the Winnipeg Jets on Thursday night.
Yeah, and I have to admit, on Thursday night, I was at the Coyotes-Blue Jackets game in Phoenix, Glendale, I should say. So Dave, watched the game, and he can speak to it more, but I was still following the game. And, Connor Hellebuyck makes, 45-plus saves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you mentioned that the Jets get their early goal, and, the Jonathan Drouin, Brendan Gallagher, Philip Deneau line took over. And, just watching the highlights, guys, I didn't need to watch the game to know how poorly the Jets played. And obviously I was following along on Illegal Curve Twitter and, could see that Connor Hellebuyck was under siege. But, just listening to Paul Maurice after the game, he was not happy. And, we heard the horse bleep comment and all of that. But, you know, it's a way of playing that I think the Jets are used to now over the last couple of years. And I think it's more so, you know, the performances of some of your better players. And, you know, Mark Scheifele and Kyle Connor connect early on that goal. But the line, I think they were on the ice for four of the Habs goals, or Scheifele was on for three, and then Wheeler and Connor were on for three of the goals. So, you know, you've obviously got a defenseman like Josh Morrissey out of the lineup. That's a guy that logs big minutes. And then Dave Buff comes in, and, you know, you don't really see Buff ease into the lineup. He plays 25 minutes, right? Yeah. So you've got Morrissey coming out, and then you've got Buff coming in. And I think, in a way, Drew, that was a recipe for disaster, right? And you have to give this Canadiens team credit, because I was looking at this the road trip, and I was saying, okay, you've got Montreal, Ottawa, Buffalo coming up, and Montreal is going to be the toughest game here. They've won 8 of their last 10, but this team is energized. I mean, this is a team that I think had such low expectations that they went into the season and they said, okay, we have something to prove.
Yep.
And they've been right there the whole year. It's not like the Montreal Canadiens have come out of obscurity. I mean, they've been right in the thick of the playoff race for the majority of the year. And, you know, I was thinking, okay, the Jets better, you know, have a good start, which they did. But they're going to have to play a strong game, because this Canadiens team is playing really well right now. So even though I didn't watch the whole game, I mean, it was clear that, you know, this just wasn't the Jets' night. This was one of those games that you just want to forget about. But, you know, with a Ottawa team coming up that's the worst team in the league, a team that you know you have to beat coming off of that bad loss to Montreal, you still have to acknowledge that it happened. I mean, and Paul Maurice said that much, Dave. He said that, you know, we're going to look at the video and we're going to go over what happened here. But it's obviously a game that, you know, you're not happy about, but you have to move on and get back on the right track.
Yeah, and I think it was one of those situations where we've been at games where the Jets haven't played their best hockey and they've still managed to be in the game or win the game. We've seen it a number of times this season. But I think from the perspective of Jets fans who were watching that game on Thursday night, I think the biggest thing was the lack of a third period push, right? Montreal came out and they were really like dominating, score three goals in that period and really take control of that game. And that's really an instance where you're really anticipating the Jets having that opportunity to really come out and kind of try and at least match the score.
Well, to your point, because it's a 2-1 game entering the final period.
Right.
I mean, keep going, but you're absolutely right about that's usually, you didn't see the punchback that has become so familiar with Jets fans.
But it was a 2-1 game, but from everything that I read, the only reason it was a 2-1 game
because of Connor
Hellebuyck.
But still.
Right? So it could have been 4-1 or 5-1.
It could have been, but, you know, in that instance, you know, the team, you would think after 40 minutes to say, hey, it's 2-1. We've played a fairly lousy game at this point in time. The only reason why it's only 2-1 is because of our goalie. Let's push back and see if we can win one for our goalie who's kept us in it for 40 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like, you know, to what Ezzy just said, that's the reality. The reality is that Connor Hellebuyck played out of his mind. I mean, for the first, you know, it was a one-all game after 20 minutes, and I think they had been outshot 17-8, and some of his saves were unbelievable. Like, I remember the left kick save that he made. I was just like, how did he make that save? Like, it was unbelievable, because sometimes, like, especially like when we're watching games live, you'll see a play setting up, and I'll kind of like lean over to which out whatever one of you guys is beside me, and I'll say, like, oh, that's a goal. Like, you kind of sense that a goal's about to happen.
Sure.
So you felt like that was an instance where you were, okay, this is a goal against. And Hellebuyck, to his credit, I thought he was the only Jet who really came out and played. And I thought Paul Maurice might have, you know, tried to switch things up a little bit more than he did in terms of his lines and really kind of jumble them and get some more, you know, maybe try and break up 26 and 55 for once.
God forbid.
Yeah. So I think, like, you know, because there's lots of instances where you have these opportunities, right? You want to get Patrick Laine going. You want to get something else doing. And, you know, he was asked about that by Mike McIntyre after the game, or maybe Kenny. I don't remember. One of the two guys that are on the road right now asked him about the idea of – no, it was Mike McIntyre, sorry.
Yeah, I think he wrote about it in today's paper as well.
Yeah, he did. So, which you can read on the illegalcurve.com website. But
there's your cheap plug for the day.
But, no, I think, you know, it's one of those situations where if you're already down and you can see that your team doesn't have it, then it, to my mind, I would
Blender.
Be like, let's start giving these opportunities, because you're not going to want to do it against Ottawa, because the reality is, I suspect the Jets are going to crush Ottawa today, because they're going to come out with a chip on their shoulder based on the way they played and the way the coach was talking and I mean, let's be realistic. Paul Maurice saying what, you know, Ezzy's comments about the everything was bad, the food was bad. I mean, that's just him deflecting all the attention from his team onto himself, and that's what a skilled guy at handling the media does. But at the end of the day, the fact is that he needs to adjust, and the team needs to adjust better.
Yeah, and if this is the one bad game of the three-game road trip, then it's not a problem, right? Because, yeah, Dave mentions, you know, the Jets are going to have a chip on their shoulder, but, you know, the Jets should beat Ottawa just because they're a better team. And yeah. you can look at the standings and see Ottawa right at the bottom of the standings. And sure, Ottawa is going to compete, and they've got some talented players. But you know, a team like the Jets, who's a top team in the Western Conference, they should beat Ottawa three times out of four, right? So when you're talking about, you know, these next two games, you can erase kind of the stench from the game against Montreal if you win your next two games, because the game against Buffalo is not going to be an easy one, because that's a team that's competing for that wild card spot in the East. So
they're tooth and nail to get into the playoffs. In fact, that the Hurricanes have now put 3 points in between themselves and Buffalo. That's just to be in the top spot that's not a wild card spot.
I just can't believe Boston and Pittsburgh are in wild card spots. I mean, those are two teams that you would think that would be, you know, second or third in their divisions, right?
You watch that Montreal Canadiens team, and you know, this is our first time, you know, really seeing them, obviously not up close and personal because it wasn't in Winnipeg, but we, you know, if you haven't been watching Habs games, you haven't seen just how good this team has been playing typically. That's a team that nobody's going to want to play in the playoffs, especially the way, I mean, Carey Price looks like Carey Price, a formidable force in the Habs goal.
And he didn't earlier in the season.
And he didn't earlier in the, and they were still putting up some okay results. But since, you know, I think it's December 15th or something, he's the second best goaltender in the league behind Robin Leonard. He's putting up, you know, .940 save percentage, something along those lines. But the Habs' speed is going to be a problem for absolutely anybody that they face in the playoffs. And right now, it would be Toronto. An all-Canadian matchup. Yeah. The Leafs and the Habs and the rest of Canada would have to, you know, plug their ears and bang their head against the wall a little bit because it's going to be overhyped so much. But I tell you what, nobody's going to want to play the Montreal Canadiens in the way they looked, if that's how they look come playoff time.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, I look at this team and, you know, the difference between this year's team and last year's team, and you can find the difference just in the trades that were made by Marc Bergevin, right? And Jonathan Drouin, you know, he's a guy that he's already equaled his point total from last year, and obviously he had, you know, the 4 points against the Jets, but you talk about Max Domi, and a lot of people thought, guys, that the Habs lost that trade at the time, right?
Yeah.
Because you're talking about, and I saw Galchenyuk on Thursday night, and he didn't look good. So,
and he's had an injury-riddled season, but
But to Ezzy's point quickly, that's why you don't fire the GM after a trade. You actually wait to see how the trade works, because remember all the people who wanted to fire Bergeron for a variety of the trades that he's made?
They wanted to fire him for the Pacioretty trade. They wanted to fire him for the Galchenyuk trade. I mean,
they wanted to fire him for the Subban trade. They wanted to fire him for, like, the whole point is Montreal looks pretty good.
So. And with some more prospects in their system coming up, a guy like Nick Suzuki that they acquired from the Golden Knights. In any event, the Habs, you know, took the Jets to the woodshed on Thursday night. The Jets look for redemption this afternoon in Ottawa when they face the Senators. When we come back, we talk about the new Winnipeg Jets power play deployment. Jack Roslovic up to the top unit, Patrick Laine down to the second unit. Do you like that move? Do you agree with it? Do you think it'll kickstart Patrick Laine? We talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Little back for Myers. Myers up top for Truba. Truba down to Brian Little at the right side. Slot for Roslovic. Scores! Jack Roslovic. Another power play goal. He has his first NHL hat trick. And it's 8-2 Jets as it's raining hats here in Bell MTS Place.
That was from last Saturday when the Winnipeg Jets absolutely demolished. They're not the Mighty Ducks. What, I mean, are they even Ducks anymore? Maybe the Ducklings Anaheim?
I got to give the Jets fans credit. When they started quack-quacking, it was
pretty funny.
I mean, the 300s always bring it, and they're usually the ones who create the inventive chants. But, like, when they started quack, quack, quack.
Somewhere, Emilio Estevez was smiling.
Yeah, the only problem for me was that game was so, I was exhausted by the first intermission because it was 6-0.
Yeah.
I mean, I was like, oh my God. Like, I said to Jim Toth at one point, I said, I called this like a 9-0 game, but I didn't think it was going to be after 20 minutes.
Yeah, it was pretty embarrassing.
It was crazy.
Yeah. The Audubon Society was upset with the quack sound, unfortunately.
Yes. Yeah.
They took to Twitter and they were ferocious about it.
Well, I used a duck hunting reference and I thought PETA might be mad at us.
Yeah.
But thankfully, we escaped their notice.
We dodged that bullet?
Yes.
Ooh,
Drew.
Thank you.
By the way, did you guys see Kenan Thompson reenact the knuckle puck?
I didn't. Where did this happen?
I think it was SNL. I didn't see it, but apparently it's funny.
If you didn't see it, and I didn't see it,
I heard about it.
I see. Okay, and you're in your Saturday Night Live message boards or something? You know, spending a lot of time on the Saturday Night Live Reddit in your spare time?
Well, Kenan Thompson's been on the show for like 15 years.
Yeah,
our show.
Yeah. Speaking of SNL, good time to plug Jay Farrow coming back to Rumors.
Well done. I was going to see if you picked up on that. That's right. Jay Farrow coming back to Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. So I might as well mention that this segment of the show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. As he just mentioned, from Saturday Night Live, Jay Farrow is going to be at Rumors May 3rd to 5th. And of course, tonight, his final night in town, he's got two shows. Jay Moore is at Rumors. You can get tickets at rumorscomedyclub.com. Our esteemed producer, Sean Asor, was there last night to see Jay Moore, and Sean gave him two thumbs up. Is that right, Shawnee?
Very funny.
Very funny.
Very funny. Very interactive with the crowd, which made for a lot of fun. And not like in the scary way, in like the fun.
Not like tearing you apart.
Yeah, like he wasn't shredding the audience, but he was very very adamant about going and participating with the people in the attendance. So it was fun. A really good show.
Regarding that comment, I must say that is a bit of a fallacy about comedy and comedy clubs. Comedians don't pick on somebody in the crowd, generally. Good comedians don't. Hacks, maybe, but they don't have those at Rumors. So, if a comedian wants to interact with somebody in the crowd, they're only going to interact with somebody who wants to be interacted with. So, there you go. There's your comedy tip of the day when it comes to going to a comedy
club.
Drew,
if I'm understanding you correctly, you're saying don't be afraid to sit in one of those first rows, because oftentimes when people go to comedy shows, they're always very afraid to be in that front row thinking that they're going to get picked apart.
That's right. And if you don't want to interact with a comedian, I promise you, the comedian is not going to interact with you.
Except for Shawnee Asor, who was literally sitting in the front row with a t-shirt that said, pick me.
Hey, Jay. Hey, Jay. No,
Sean just kept repeating, show me the money.
We actually got moved. When we sat down, we got sat right by the stage, and I was flooded with anxiety. Like, oh my God, we're going to get shredded by Jay Moore.
If he had known that you worked with Remus, then maybe.
He was actually in studio.
I know he was in studio on Thursday, I think it was. Yeah, he had an interview with Huss, of course. Yeah. But anyways, Jay Moore at Rumors Restaurant. And Comedy Great. Club, Jay Farrow coming up May 3rd to 5th. Let's get back to talking about the Winnipeg Jets power play. We plugged off the start there. That audio you heard was from last Saturday. Jack Roslovic, 3 power play goals. All of a sudden, Jack Roslovic is on the Jets' number one power play unit.
Can we talk about that for a second, though?
That's the point of the segment, yes.
That's funny. Not just the Lion A Roslovic switch, but the fact that Roslovic got a power play hat trick. I don't think people realize how rare that is.
Yeah, but they were literally, that game you could have scored against the Anaheim Ducks.
Well, that game was not real.
Yeah.
And the next game, Drew, and the game after, even Ottawa put up 4 and blanked them 4-0.
It was not a good Western Canadian road trip for the Anaheim Ducks.
No, that was the type of game, we all played hockey. That was the type of game where, you play a team and they just keep scoring and that team is going to be called up, right? Like they're the A1 team that's playing in the A2 league, right? Like that was like the Jets versus the Ducks.
That's a good analogy. I like that. So let's talk about the power play, moving Roslovic up and Line A down.
Well, it's temporary.
Well, everything in life is temporary, but yes, I don't think... But, in the here and the now, and that's all we can ever talk about on the program, is what has happened in the last week and what's, do we anticipate happening in the next few days. I find it to be a bit of a bizarre move. I'm not sure how this gets Patrick Line A going. I guess you're rewarding Jack Roslovic for success, but aren't you playing with fire in that you're maybe, ruining a good thing that you had going on your second power play unit?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it is bizarre. And Paul Maurice has his reasons, Dave. But I think when you're talking about Line A, he's arguably the biggest weapon in the entire league. Maybe Alex Ovechkin is in that category.
On the power play,
Line A's howitzer, his shot, it's in a different league. There just aren't players that can shoot the puck like him. And even though he hasn't scored now in, 8 games or 9 games, he's stuck on 25, right? So, he's struggling to put the puck in the net. But the reason why, I don't necessarily like it, and Paul Maurice is the big boss. He's the one that makes the decisions. And like I said, he has his reasons. And I do think this is short term. I wouldn't be surprised if Line A skates out there on the top power play unit this afternoon, guys, against the Senators, because when you have a player like that, it's just a matter of time. And I feel like we've been talking about this now for 2 months, but you know that Line A is going to break out of this eventually. Like, nobody actually thinks that we're going to be sitting around here at the end of March March, and Laine is going to still be stuck on 25 or 26 goals. The goals are going to come. He scored 18 in the month of November. But I think when you're talking about Laine for Roslovic, I mean, it has nothing to do, I think, with individual talent. And you're just trying to maybe see if you can get something going for him on a different unit. But with the chemistry that Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele have with Patrick Laine, we've seen it so many times, Dave, with, you know, using Scheifele as a decoy, or, you know, Connor can even bring the puck from the goal line, you know, for a different type of look. But I think you're going to see Laine move back, and I think right now it's just a function of what's happening with this group of players. Not just Laine, but I think the team as a whole, guys. You go back to that San Jose game, and you could argue that they were lucky to get a point in that game. And I think the power play has not been as spectacular as it was earlier in the season. I mean, the Jets are still, I believe, top five in the league.
Yeah,
but
fourth
overall. Especially on the road. I mean, the home power play has been significantly better.
Best home power play in the league.
So I think, you know, Maurice is getting the power play blender out, and I wouldn't look too much into it, and I wouldn't expect this. There's not going to be, you know, a lot of permanence to this.
You know, on Tuesday night against San Jose, Dave, and you know, the switch happened, you know, entering the Montreal game. But on Tuesday night, Laine had, what, four or five pretty good, mm-hmm. you know, shots on goal on the power play where Wheeler was able to saucer the pass over to him.
Yep.
That he obviously didn't convert on them, but I thought the power play was dangerous mm-hmm. in that he was certainly getting his opportunities.
Right.
If I was going to pinpoint something, I didn't think that there was any real reason to make that move after Tuesday's game, unless you're punishing, you know, Laine, you know, punishing in quotes, for sort of how the overtime power play ended up with the turnover and then the shorthanded goal by Pavelski. But, you know, to take what happens in a 4-on-3 power play situation in overtime and use that as reason to change it 5-on-4, to me, doesn't seem to be an equitable analysis.
Yeah, and the question is it maybe something reflective of the overall play of the player, and maybe this is one way of trying to get him going a little bit, is that you're taking away a little bit of a bonus playing with that top unit. But, I mean, to your earlier point, Drew, why would you mess up with a second unit that seems to be having a lot of success?
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing also is you're putting Scheifele in a spot where you normally see Mark Scheifele. Sorry, you're putting Laine in the spot that we normally see Mark Scheifele. And even, like, on some of the passes, he just wasn't ready in time because he's not used to that quick short pass to try and convert on. So you could see, like, he wasn't set the way he normally is. And we've seen him sometimes in front of the net before. It's not like it was the first instance of that. But to me, you're not maximizing your weapon, because Patrick Laine, regardless of whether his shot, like to your point, Drew, about getting those opportunities, the fact of the matter is the power play units all know they have to key on that, because everybody's going to try and send it over to Laine. So if you're trying to send it over to Laine and they're cheating over to Laine, that gives Mark Scheifele, and he's got a lethal shot, an opportunity to get a goal.
Well, let me ask you this. So it was 2-1 for the Jets against the Sharks. The Jets got the power play and they scored.
That 3-1
to make
goal.
It 3-1. Yeah. It was the Scheifele, you know, like that. You took the little pass
exactly.
from Wheeler right in his wheelhouse, sort of between the
circles.
Two hash marks, and he wired it in. It's 3-1. Now, of course, the goal gets called back because of the offside challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think this move happens if that goal doesn't get called back? Because I don't. I don't think they make the switch. You know, and that goal was a good goal, and that's how the power play should look. It just so happens that a play that's relatively inconsequential to, you know, to how the actual goal was scored ends up disallowing the goal. If the Jets get that power play goal by Scheifele and it counts on the scoreboard,
mm-hmm.
I don't see them fiddling with the power play right now.
Well, and it's hard to say, right? But I think it's more a function of the way Laine is playing and his lack of production on the power play. And Dave makes a good point. I mean, if you have Laine on your top unit, it's much more dangerous.
Mm.
And that's a fact, right? Laine, he scored 20 power play goals last year.
Yeah. Well, besides Ovechkin, he's one of the best weapons on the power play in the entire NHL.
Right. So I really believe that it's a combination of, yes, Jack Roslovic is being rewarded for how he's playing, especially on the power play, but I think it also might have something to do with, you know, Nikolaj Ehlers is going to be out a little bit here, and I realize that, you know, Patrick Laine doesn't play the same spot on the second power play unit as Ehlers, but you wonder if you know, Paul Maurice is thinking, okay, well, if Ehlers is going to be out for, you know, another week and a half or 2 weeks, we really don't know. It's going to be at least a week. But
he skated with the team yesterday in Ottawa in a non-contact jersey.
Yeah, and the coach said it was 7 to 8 days before.
Yeah, right.
Stuff,
so you're right. You're about a week and a half to 2 weeks.
So you wonder if, you know, know, Paul Maurice in game is trying to see, you know, well, if we put Line A out there and, you know, with the second unit, you know, Brian Little, Matty Perreault, you wonder if, you know, that's an option for him. I'm just trying to think a little bit outside of the box here, Drew, but when you talk about, you know, Line A's overall game, guys, I mean, this is the $64,000 question, right? I mean, nobody really can figure out why Line A's struggles now have reached epic proportions. It's one thing if, you know, you go 2 games, 3 games, 4 games, even 5 games, but when you're talking about, you know, 1 goal in his last 16 games, he hasn't scored in 26 days.
Yeah,
I mean, that's just, I mean, what other player would we be talking about where like this, where we'd be talking about, you know, his epic struggles? I mean, it's one thing for a 20 or 21 year old player to have some struggles, but when it's a guy like Line A, second overall pick, a guy that, you know, many people picked, including myself, to win the Rocket Richard Trophy this year, I mean, you start to now almost overthink things. And I think when you're talking about Line A on the second power play, I really believe it's only going to be short term. As I mentioned, I wouldn't even be surprised if this afternoon Line A's having a good game and, you know, Coach Maurice puts him out there on the top unit.
Well, we will see. The Jets, of course, have games today in Ottawa and tomorrow in Buffalo. We'll see where Line A is lined up on the power play units. When we come back, we're going to head out to Ottawa. We'll be joined by Winnipeg Jets broadcaster Paul Edmonds. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can reach us in studio via Twitter. That's the best way to do it. You can send us your tweets at Illegal Curve. We're also accepting text messages. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. If we like your tweet, if we like your text, we might read it on air. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We head west of the nation's capital to Kanata, Ontario, where Winnipeg Jets broadcaster Paul Edmonds joins us ahead of this afternoon's Jets-Senators game. Paulie, good morning. Thanks for waking up early with us.
Yeah, no problem, guys. Anytime.
Oh, always appreciate it, Paul.
Welcome to the big show, Paul.
No, that's usually an hour earlier.
Yeah, no, we don't work that early. That's a little too much for us. Paulie obviously brought you on to talk about this afternoon's Jets-Senators game, but before we look ahead to this afternoon, I wanted to go back to Thursday night in Montreal where the Jets had probably one of their worst performances all season long, where, you know, the Montreal Canadiens really took them to the woodshed. At least they took them to the woodshed in the third period after really controlling most of the first 40 minutes, I would suggest. Do you think the Jets were maybe caught a little off guard by the speed of the Montreal Canadiens entering that game on Thursday night?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think when you talk to the players and the coaching staff before and after, that everyone was prepared in terms of off ice and their meetings and video work on what was going to happen. They were ill-prepared for what actually did happen, which was a mirror of what they were told was going to happen. So if that makes any sense, yeah, I mean, you can't experience it until you experience it, right? So you can be told all the time about what this is going to do and how this is going to happen and how this is going to play out and all those things. And until you get in the heat of the moment, you don't have an answer or an idea of really what it's going to be like. And that's what happened. Winnipeg, not for the first few minutes of the hockey game, you know, we're okay. The turnovers hurt them, though. And this is where I kind of think that the turnovers were a problem. When you are turning the puck over as badly as the Winnipeg Jets did on Thursday night, and you've got a team that skates as well as Montreal does, you're in chase mode all the time. There was over 20 giveaways by the Winnipeg Jets, according to the stat sheet from the National Hockey League, from that game. It's just far too many. Now, Montreal had a few as well, but they were on their game. Winnipeg could never get to their speed to match Montreal's speed because they were turning the puck over, rolling their eyes, and then going, okay, I guess I better get going here to chase the puck. It's just not a way to play, and it's just not the way the Winnipeg Jets play. They play with speed, and they usually protect the puck very well. Well, they didn't the other night. As a result, Montreal capitalized on that. They were hard on pucks. There was a lot of pressure on Winnipeg Jets, part, I think, in parcel to the fact that they pressured them so so much that Winnipeg was forced into some of those mistakes. And as a result, the transition game of Montreal was on full display. So, you know, Winnipeg wasn't ill-prepared to play Montreal. They just weren't prepared to play at that speed. They will the next time they see Montreal, because the Canadians aren't going to sneak up on the Winnipeg Jets, that's for sure. But the real question is, how do you bounce back here this afternoon against Ottawa? And regardless of Ottawa's record here, gentlemen, Winnipeg needs to have a much better game, a much quicker game, a much better game with pace overall with all of their lines this afternoon to kind of erase that bad taste in their mouth from Thursday.
Paulie, even though that game on Thursday was a big disappointment, and you know the game prior to that against the Sharks, that was a game in which the Jets obviously could have picked up the 2 points. But when you look at these two games, is the big bright spot the way Connor Hellebuyck is playing? Because he obviously gets the, you know, the 48 saves in Montreal and keeps that game low scoring early on. But I thought he was also excellent in that game against the Sharks and made some big saves throughout the game.
Yeah, there's no question, Ezra, that I think that ever since that game where he got his nose out of joint a little bit when Vegas came in and Lauren Brossoit got the start, he's been much better. And sometimes you need a jolt every once in a while. It wasn't that he was going to lose his number one position as the top goaltender on the team. It's just that the coaching staff was looking around and saying, you know, we've got this backup goaltender that hasn't lost really yet. He got tagged with a loss that shouldn't have been his in Calgary after Connor Hellebuyck was, and the Winnipeg Jets for that matter, were blitzed for 5 goals in the first period a few months ago. But other than that, this guy's been pretty flawless. And as a result, they put him in. Connor Hellebuyck didn't appreciate it. He was kind of cheeky with the media, as we've discussed a few times the next day. And from there, I thought that he's really bolstered his game. It's been much better. There hasn't been that. I think we could probably make the criticism in the first 6 weeks of the season. He was playing okay, but there always seemed to be one of those goals where he looked at and you went, should he have had that? Should that be one that you'd want back? You know, sort of that question mark around at least one of the goals in the game. I don't know that we've said that in the last handful of starts for Connor Hellebuyck. He's played very well. He's going to get the day off today. It's going to be Lauren Brossoit's game in net for the Winnipeg Jets today, and he'll make his first ever appearance as a starter, certainly, against the Ottawa Senators and look for a win. Numbers aren't great in his other appearance, and that came with the Edmonton Oilers. But Connor Hellebuyck has been what we expected him to be, and that's why he was a Vezina finalist last year in terms of the way he's played the last little while. So there's been no complaints there. He held Winnipeg in. There was over 50 shots. That was a season high that the Winnipeg Jets have given up. And still, despite the fact that they were a step behind for the first 40 minutes of the hockey game on Thursday night at Bell Center, Connor Hellebuyck had given them enough where they were one shot away in the third period from tying the game until it kind of got unraveled completely for them in the middle of that third period. So that's all you want from your goaltender. Give us a chance. Stop the puck. Stop the puck behind the net. Let our defensemen pick it up on retrieves. And away we go. We'll try to stop the second and third shots from coming in. And he certainly provided that and delivered that for the Winnipeg Jets in the last handful of games or so.
Well, in our last segment, we talked about the flip-flop of Jack Rozovic and Patrick Laine on the power play units. What are your thoughts on that? And do you see that being a permanent situation, or do you see that just being temporary?
I think it's probably temporary, Dave. They talked about it being, or they tried to spin it as being, a reward for Jack Rozovic and the way he's played. And yet Jack Rozovic was a guy that got stable to the bench for quite a while there the other night in Montreal. And they didn't really have an opportunity for the power plays. They were 0-for-2 officially, but they didn't really, you know, one of those was late in the game and the other one, you know, wasn't much of a power play. So I don't want to say that we've had enough sample size to really make an assessment on how that switch is going to work. Do they carry it over today? Well, I think so, because we haven't had enough time to see it. What do I make of it? Well, it's a little bit of a reward, I would think. There's definitely truth there. But I think the diversion is they're trying to give Patrick Laine a bit of a break. And it's not a bad thing to stick him in between the circles and the middle of the net. He's a big body there, and he's certainly going to get a stick on a puck. I know he wants to shoot the puck, and he wants to have those one-timers that go in unimpeded and, you know, then have everybody come over to him and celebrate. But it just hasn't worked for a while, and too many games have piled up where he hasn't scored a power play goal. I think it's 16 and counting going into the game this afternoon. And then he hasn't scored a goal in over nine games overall. So it was time for a change. And I think it's just as much about rewarding Jack Roslovic for the way he played last week as it is to make sure that you take some pressure away from Patrick Laine and give the opposition a bit of a different look and try to spark your power play, which at one point was first in the National Hockey League, then was second, and now has dropped a little bit. It was down to third, and coming into the game today, it's fourth. So, you know, there was time for a change there. So I think it's a little bit of both. I don't think it's just all on, hey, we want to reward Jack Roslovic with more playing time and put him on the number one unit. I think they want to take some pressure off of Patrick Laine, give that number one unit a bit of a different look to the opposition, move Laine onto the second unit, move him into the middle and see what happens. So, you know, I applaud it because I think any time that you're looking to change, that you're not afraid of making that change. And the Winnipeg Jets look like they're going to try to do that. And, I mean, it's not carved in stone, right? Like, it could go back to the way it was if this doesn't work either, or Patrick Laine all of a sudden finds the Midas touch again. So, but then again, and I'm contradicting myself, if he does in the middle of the ice on the second power play unit, you're going to make a change and move him off and move him over to the wing. So there's lots of things at play here, but I thought it was time for a change for that number one unit anyway, just by the fact that they hadn't scored a lot of goals, especially the guy that's set up to one-time them over on the far side.
Winnipeg Jets broadcaster Paul Edmonds joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290. Paul, you talk about the time for a change. The only thing that hasn't changed that seems pretty static is, you know, the alignment of the first line with Connor, Scheifele, and Wheeler, and then the second line with Laine and Little and Roslovic, as you mentioned. I'm sure you're aware of the clamoring of people that want to see Laine given an opportunity with the big boys of Scheifele and Wheeler. You know, if not now, when, you know, the team is sort of, I'm not going to say they're in a lull, but, you know, you're not yet at the stretch drive into the playoff race, because that'll maybe start after the trade deadline. You're in a good position being atop the Central Division. When would you possibly see Laine move up with Scheifele and Wheeler to see if maybe that can help shake him out of his doldrums?
See, I don't think that happens. And I think there's two guys ahead of him on the depth chart that go on that line. One guy's on IR right now that's probably going to come off in the next week or so, in Nikolai Ehlers. And then there's the guy that's there. And the guy that's there, in Kyle Connor, I don't see why you want to make a move. They've got to find a spot for Patrick Laine aside from that first line. I just don't know if there's going to be the chemistry there. And that's part of the reason I believe that he's not on the first power play unit. Guess who's on the first power play unit? Scheifele and Wheeler. Look at some of the body language at sometimes with those two guys when it comes to Patrick Laine and his inability to score a goal or hit the net in the last handful or 10 games on the power play. So read into it as you will. To me, it also says that those guys need a bit of a respite as well on that number one power play unit. So there's some change there happening because they want to get some people going and eliminate some frustration on all of them for not being able to score, take some pressure off of Patrick Laine. So now you're going to do that, and then you're going to put them on the top line with those two guys? That doesn't make any sense to me. So I don't think that's going to happen. They can clamor all they want on Twitter. You know, the fact of the matter is there's other things at play here. And Patrick Laine needs to find his game before you get the reward to be on the number one line. Oh, hey, he's struggling. He hasn't scored a power play goal in 16 games. He hasn't scored a goal in 9. Let's move him up to the top line and see if we can get him going. I just think there's a tertiary here that you've got to work your way up to the number one line by improved play, not by looking for a spark and to try to have those two guys provided for you. There's nothing wrong with the top line and the way it's playing for the Winnipeg Jets right now. You know, you got Kyle Connor had 31 goals in that line last year, splitting some time there. He's had 22 goals this year. He's on pace for 34, which would be a new career high in one season for him playing on that line. And again, he split time between the second line and the first line. I don't think there's a change coming for Patrick Laine to move up on that left spot with Wheeler and Scheifele.
Paulie, yesterday Jets head coach Paul Maurice wouldn't really commit to whether or not Josh Morrissey's going to be good to go this afternoon. He just said that it was a question mark, and we're going to find out closer to game time. But when you're talking about, you know, the Jets' D pairs, obviously Joe Morrow was playing with Jacob Trouba up on that top pair. If Morrissey isn't able to go, do you expect the same D pairs this afternoon against the Ottawa Senators? And, you know, I guess it goes without saying that, you know, the Jets could use Josh Morrissey on that top pair. But I guess, how did you think that the Jets did, result, I guess, aside, in that game against Thursday with Morrissey out of the lineup?
Well, certainly when you take him out of the lineup, you move a guy out that is a puck mover and a very good defender. So he's a big loss. I thought Joe Morrow was fine. Joe Morrow has been a real nice addition to the Winnipeg Jets on the bottom end of your pairings. And he moved up, and you could probably not overexpose him for a couple of games on your top pairing with Jacob Trouba, but at some point you're probably going to if he has to stay there. So Josh Morrissey, for me, I believe will play today. He looked pretty good. I went to the skate yesterday. It was optional, but he was out there with Jacob Trouba, and he was skating. He looked like he was fluid on the ice and wasn't laboring at all, spoke to the media, and was doing one-timers with Jacob Trouba. So I expect that those two will be back paired together today. The question mark for me is, too, there is another sort of possible injury on the back end for the Winnipeg Jets that doesn't involve Trouba or Morrissey, and that might have somebody and have their inability to play the game here this afternoon. Paul Maurice wouldn't reveal who it was, so we'll have to see going into the game today and the warm-up skate as to whether everybody's out there from the defensive core. The other part of it is you got Dustin Byfuglien back the other day, and while I thought Dustin moved well, I just didn't think that his processing was as quick as it usually is, and that's probably a byproduct of missing 15 games. So I think Dustin will be a little bit better today because he's got back to game speed after one game. So, you know, there's lots of play here on the back end, but Joe Morrow's been fine. If everybody is able to go and there's no other injuries with Josh Morrissey coming back, I guess Joe Morrow's the outside guy looking in today. If there remains an injury on the blue line with Morrissey coming back and somebody else coming out, Joe Morrow stays in. But I thought Joe was fine the other day with Jacob Trouba, Ezra.
You know what, Paul, we're less than 3 weeks away from that trade deadline, and Jets fans are seeing teams around the Central and around the league making some moves. If you had to put on your prognostication hat, would you anticipate that Kevin Cheveldayoff is going to be making a big splash ahead of the trade deadline this season?
Yeah, if he can. I mean, there's you have to have two to tango, right, Dave? I mean, you have to have you consummate a deal with another team, and it has to be agreed to by the other team, and I don't know if you're looking for fairness or not. I mean, usually there's not that many times over the course of NHL trades that you say, oh, boy, one team really got the better of the other. I think we could probably look back and say that Winnipeg did a few years ago against Buffalo. But
Peter Chiarelli would disagree with you there, Paulie.
What's that?
Peter Chiarelli would disagree with you there.
Well, Edmonton Oilers fans would for sure. Yeah. I don't know if Peter would. But, but in this case, I don't think you're going to be able to do anything with the players that are at play here,
yeah,
without certainly giving up something. And I think the Winnipeg Jets are willing and prepared to move some of their assets if they get a player that they deem to be an improvement and can help them get through and get a little bit further than they did last year, which means get through the Western Conference Final and into the Stanley Cup Final. But I also believe that they're not going to look at this and say, this is a 1 year only, we've only got this opportunity to win, and we're going to throw everything at it and damn the future. Because I think that they see themselves as having this window open for quite a few years here going forward. So there's that balance, right? There's that balance to try to make sure that you go out and get somebody that can help you. Make a statement within your room that you're prepared to win here as well. Take a piece also off the market that nobody else can get. So those are all at play when you go out and try to improve your team with a highlight piece like a Matt Duchene or a Mark Stone or a Wayne Simmons or whoever it is. But at the same time, if you're giving up five players and a big chunk of your future, does that make a whole lot of sense for a rental? So there will be that balance, and there will be those decisions that have to be made. Could it be a big splash? For sure. I think if you land any of those names, regardless if it's one player coming over or one player plus, I think that's going to be a big splash for the Winnipeg Jets, as was Paul Stastny last year when they acquired him from St. Louis. So Winnipeg is definitely in the market. Winnipeg is definitely a player. They are for sure on the phone, and they are working the phones with all teams to try to find a fit for them to improve their team. But it won't be at the expense of moving ahead for what the Winnipeg Jets see in the future, and that's a pretty competitive team that can contend for a Stanley Cup for years to come, not just this season. But I would have to tell you that the window is wide open this year for the Winnipeg Jets, feeling that, you know, they got past Nashville last year. They probably can win their division. They're going to have some, if they do, they're going to have some stiff competition coming out of that right into the Western Conference Final with some teams that we just saw the other day in San Jose and coming up Vegas and then also Calgary. So, you know, the time is nigh to improve your team, but not at the risk of giving away your entire future.
And Paul Edmonds is a Winnipeg Jets broadcaster. You can hear him on the call of this afternoon's Jets-Senators game alongside Dennis Bayak and Brian Munns. We like to call them the three-headed monster. Paul, we appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much for joining us, buddy.
My pleasure, guys. Anytime. Have a great weekend. Talk to you later.
You too, Paulie. Thanks again. When we come back, we talk about the Jets and the Senators contest later on this afternoon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Little sends it back to Myers. In for Nikolai Ehlers. Save made. Anderson rebounds. Score! Matthew Perreault, who had gone 19 without a goal, finds the back of the net power play marker, and it's a 6-4 game on Perreault's 17th of the year.
That was late last season, the Jets' only visit to Ottawa. Obviously, playing the Senators was a panacea for Matthew Perreault, getting him off the goal-scoring schneid. Maybe it will be the same for Patrick Laine later on this afternoon.
Great word, panacea.
Thank you. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290 as part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day. This segment of the program is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the whole family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
You know, boys, last week on the 10th anniversary show, we don't have the audio clip, unfortunately, unless Sean is a miracle worker and he can go back to last Saturday's show.
But Sean's shaking his head. He's like, nah, I'm not doing it.
What did I say was going to happen in the Jets-Ducks game?
You did say it was going to be a blowout.
I said it was going to be a blowout. I didn't necessarily know that the Jets were going to score 10 goals for our 10th anniversary show.
They didn't. They scored 9.
No, I know. Try to score 10.
I know.
I'm actually going to go and I'm going to give...
Well, hang on. Before you get a little too on your horse, high and mighty there, buddy boy, you also said that you thought the Oilers were going to sweep their back-to-back games
and they lost both games.
Well,
what I was going to say is it was actually like a loss sweep.
That's not, right. You were 100% wrong.
They were going to sweep
you had an opportunity
in the wrong way.
Yeah, no,
you know,
they lost both games.
Sweeping to the right, they swept to the left.
There you go. Very good.
But I'm going to give them the Ginsburg lock here. I think the Jets are going to come out and absolutely pummel the Senators this afternoon.
Well, there you have it. Kreskin over here.
Wasn't that a nuke lock from like half an hour ago?
I don't know.
I said they were going to be pummeling.
Yeah, but you don't make it all about yourself, Dave. You got to make it more all about yourself so that we really can remember the moment.
Yeah, I like to keep it just slide in there and, you know.
Yeah, you know.
Worst case scenario, if I'm wrong, I just like, all right, nobody heard me.
Yeah, exactly. You can be subtle, whereas Ezzy likes to scream from the rooftops and then he's going to, you know, either revel in the joy of being correct or you know, revel in the shame of being incorrect.
Yeah, he likes both.
Sorry, I know. Drew. He just likes the attention.
Sorry, Drew. I know you want to get into the segment here, but can we agree that nothing is ever going to top picking Todd Richards for Coach of the Year?
And having him fired 10 games into the season.
How long ago was that? 5 years ago?
It was a lot of years ago when he was the Columbus Blue Jackets head coach. And he was going to win the Jack Adams. And he was fired
5 games into the season.
Yeah, he was fired 5 games into the season. Yeah. You know, we don't pay you enough is basically what it boils down to.
I don't get paid at all.
Maybe that is enough in that case. Let's talk about the Jets and the Senators. Obviously, the Senators are the worst team in the NHL. They are coming off a victory, a rare victory for them this year.
A shutout.
Qualified by who they beat.
Yeah. Yeah, they beat the Ottawa, the Anaheim Ducks in the in a, what was once a Stanley Cup Finals rematch, but a long way away from those dates and times. But the Senators, like you said, Ezzy, this is a they're a terrible hockey team. We know that they give up way too much, on the defensive side of the game. They can score goals, but I mean, last time the Jets played there, I believe it was a 6-5 game. That game where Matthew Perreault scored the game-winning goal that we just played the clip of. So. If the Jets aren't careful, they could get into a track meet with
Toronto
the Ottawa
did,
Senators.
Right? That game was a 5-4 game on Wednesday.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you get a little carried away playing the Senators because they play so loose, they can score on you. They do have offense they trade Duchesne and Stone between now and 1 o'clock this afternoon, which I don't foresee happening to Winnipeg. You know, I don't foresee happening. But
they could.
Well, I mean, they might trade him to Winnipeg. I don't think it'll happen before this afternoon's game,
No.
But, this is a Senators team that certainly can score but also gives up a ton of goals in return.
Yeah, you nailed it. I mean, and they're a fun team to watch. I mean, they're obviously, a bad hockey team. And, I actually think, you mentioned the shutout against the Ducks. And Anders Nilsson, we'll ask Dean Brown coming up. And, Nilsson has been a nice story here. Picks up the shutout against the Ducks. But in nine games, he's sporting a .934 save percentage. He's picked up five wins. I mean, this was a guy that just couldn't really seemed to find any stability with the Canucks. He was in and out of the lineup, spending the majority of the time as a backup goaltender, with the Canucks. But that was a nice pickup, I thought, by Pierre Dorion and the Senators. And, Nilsson's a guy that's obviously coming into a tough situation, Dave, but, he's given them excellent goaltending. I don't know who the starter's going to be.
Yeah, Guy Boucher hasn't confirmed who's going to be the starting goalie yet.
We'll ask Dean Brown, who he's leaning towards right now, 4 hours to go, or 5 hours to go before the game this afternoon. But, you make a good point about the Jets and the Senators. You don't want to get, into a run-and-gun type of situation, but I really think the Jets aren't going to be happy, with that game on Thursday night, and they're going to come out with a much more complete effort against this Senators team. And, even though, Matt Duchesne, Mark Stone, guys like that, throw in, a guy like Ryan Zingle is a nice hockey player, another guy that might be moved.
Yeah.
Prior to the deadline. I mean, the Jets just, overmatch the Senators once you get down to those depth lines. And I think, the Senators' defense should be pressured by the Jets' speed. And, I expect a much better, more complete game from the top line of Scheifele, Connor, and Wheeler. And, we talked about it. Patrick Laine is the big question mark. You never know with these afternoon games, but I think Laine, playing on the second power play unit, I think he is, you expect to be motivated, but we'll see. But on paper, this is a game that you have to win.
When we come back, Ottawa Senators broadcaster Dean Brown joins us for more on the Jets and the Senators. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day. I'm your host Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Dave Minuke and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Sean Assor doing a great job behind the board. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by the play-by-play voice of the Ottawa Senators on our sister station, TSN 1200. Dean Brown joins the program now. Dean, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Morning, boys.
How are you, Dean? Nice to hear from you again.
I'm doing well, thanks.
That's good. Obviously, brought you on to talk about the Jets and the Senators. There's quite a high probability of this being an offensive shootout, given the offensive prowess of both teams. But the Senators obviously give up a lot of goals in their own zone. That's not telling you anything you don't know, Dean. But for opposing teams coming in to play the Senators, how difficult is it to sort of prevent them from getting into a track meet with the Senators? We saw it happen on Wednesday night when the Senators and the Leafs played in Toronto. It was a 5-4 game. With the freewheeling, open style the Senators play, how difficult is it for an opposing team to get sucked into that style?
Well, usually the Senators, one of the problems they've had this year is that they give that up. Let's face it, they're a far better offensive team than a defensive team. So, yeah, they would prefer it to be more of a track meet. But to be honest with you, they commit and have committed so many errors in their own end and are just sometimes just so difficult for them to be able to contain both men and the puck in their own zone that they give up a ton of zone time. And so you don't necessarily have to do anything to prevent getting into a track meet with Ottawa, because usually they'll try and prevent it themselves inadvertently. So it's one of the reasons why they've given up the most, on average, the most shots in games, and why they've given up the most goals on average per game. It's, you know, offense, they've got things to be proud of. You know, it's got a, it's a team with a pretty good power play, and they've, for the most part this year, been in the top 10 as far as offense goes. I think today they're 11th, but, you know, by and large, they've been, you know, inside or around the top 10 in the league offensively. But almost all their problems are usually self-inflicted, and they're usually in the defensive zone.
Dean, just how nice of a story has Andrew Nilsson been? Because, you know, the Senators acquired him back in early January. He got the shutout, obviously, the other night against the Anaheim Ducks. But, you know, this is a guy that's, you know, played really well for the Senators, and I think even a guy that they're considering re-signing right now.
Yeah, there's still some questions to what's going to happen with Mike Condon. He's still out with a hip injury. He's been out for 43 games or thereabouts, and they're talking that he's back on the ice again and taking shots and may be able to play again next month. Problem they have is a contract issue in that they would have to do something with Mike Condon if they chose to re-sign Nielsen as the backup the backup goaltender. Because they still got Condon under contract for next year, and so it would put them in an awkward situation. But he did certainly come in and kind of help out when they were kind of floundering in that backup position when Condon went down, mostly because they have depth in the organization at goaltending, and they're actually in a pretty good spot, but they're kind of in a donut. They don't have, you know, they're in the hole in the donut right now, where they don't have anybody right now that is at the level to be able to come up. They have a couple of guys in the minors, in Marcus Hogberg and Philip Gustafson, and they believe that one day they will be the 1-2 combination here. But Gustafson just turned 20, I think, and Hogberg is 23, and he came up, played some games, but, you know, very not ready to be everyday NHLers. In the case of Gustafson, they think that one day he'll probably be the starter here. He came to them in that trade where they sent Derek Brassard to Pittsburgh, and Gustafson was the goalie they got back. If you remember, a couple of years ago, he was the goaltender of the tournament at the World Juniors for Team Sweden. So he's kind of the guy that they looked down the pipe, but they didn't really have anybody who was ready to make that step right now. And they got Mike McKenna, a veteran guy who's been on, I think, 17 different teams, and he kind of filled a hole for a while, but he's really not the guy that's going to carry it if your starter goes down. So, you know, Nielsen has been a good story to come in here and kind of stabilize that backup role, but it's going to be interesting to see if he is a guy that they indeed sign, because if they do, then you have the question of what you're going to do with Mike Condon.
You know, Dean, we're less than 3 weeks away from the trade deadline, and of course teams are looking at the Senators as an opportunity with Matt Duchene and Mark Stone. So how are those players managing to keep their heads down and not allow this to become a distraction to them?
You know, the interesting thing is that they both deal with it very differently because they're both very different people. Matt Duchene openly talks about what's going on and what's happening and how he's feeling, and that he's undecided right now as to whether he's going to re-sign or not. And Mark Stone is the other way around. He is a guy that will not talk about any of it, and he's asked every day, and he nods and understands that reporters have to ask every day just in case he's changed his mind, he's willing to talk about it, but he will not say word one about any part of the process whatsoever. The only thing we know is that all sides are willing to concede that talks are going on, and the deadline is coming, and everybody here knows that Ottawa, they've made it very, very clear, they made it very clear with Carlson, that, you know, they're not going to use the New York Islanders business plan of how to operate, which is cross your fingers and hope that John Tavares stays, and then he doesn't, and you got by the trade deadline, and you didn't get anything for him. That's, you know, when Carlson refused to sign here, they traded him to get something back for him. And it will be the same for Stone, it will be the same for Duchene, it'll be the same for Ryan Dezingle. All three are UFAs. So if contracts can't be signed, if they won't agree to contracts, if they can't get them signed, they will absolutely trade them.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Dean Brown. Dean is the Ottawa Senators play-by-play broadcaster on TSN 1200 in Ottawa. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Senators, 1 o'clock puck drop this afternoon. Dean, you mentioned Stone and Duchene, and they certainly get all of the headlines, but Ryan Dezingle is also an unrestricted free agent at season's end, and his name has been bandied about in the trade talks, and he goes a little bit under the radar, but he's got 20 goals this year. He's got 20 assists. He's got 40 40 points. He would certainly fit well on a number of different teams. For people who might not be as familiar with him, what's the best attribute, the best part of his game that he brings to the table?
Speed. You know, he's a guy that's, you know, this game is now very, very quick, and he has tons of that. And I think probably one of the big reasons why, you're right, he's got 20 goals, and that's nothing to sneeze at. He's got 40 points, again, nothing to sneeze at. But I think when scouts watch Ryan play, he is not as advanced a player as Mark Stone or Matt Duchene. He's still, I'm not going to say one-dimensional, but his offensive dimension is really the only one that counts right now. And there's a lot of other parts of his game that aren't as, like I said, mature as players like Stone and Duchene that can play, you know, on both ends of the ice. So if you're looking for somebody with lots of speed to drive the pace and is going to get you points, then Ryan Dzingel would be your guy. But, you know, in playoff-style hockey where everybody has to defend, that might not be his strongest suit, and one-on-one battles are not his strong suit. And you know what I mean? Like, it's just he's not at the stage of his career right now because he is 26 years old, but he's a kid that came out of college late, so he didn't even start playing professional hockey until he was 22. So, you know, he has a way to go, ways to go if you get by the offensive stats, which certainly draw your attention. But if you get by the offensive stats and you look at him, you can see there's other things he has to be able to add to his game to get anywhere close to the kind of level that Stone or Duchene are at as far as the free agency market.
Dean, Jets fans aren't going to like hearing this, but the Senators have not allowed a power play goal in their last 7 games. What would you attribute the Senators' penalty killing success to? Is this just a function of Guy Boucher and his, you know, his brilliance, or is this just the personnel that the Ottawa Senators are able to trot out there?
Well, they've gotten a lot of people back from injury, and getting a guy like Jean-Gabriel Pageau back from a long-term injury has helped them a great deal. And to be honest with you, just finally settling into a system that's suited for this team and the personnel that this team has. They were trying to play a system early on that really was very effective. It's very effective for Phoenix, who are the best team in the league at it, and that's pretty much the same system Ottawa was trying to play. They just didn't have the kinds of players who are capable of playing that way. And they've gotten, obviously, a lot better. They're, you know, as far as the penalty kill goes, they're still, you know, bottom of the league. They're still 25th, but when you spend most of the season as the worst penalty kill in the league, having these kinds of stretches is pretty good. And the irony is that, you know, this year, Boucher has taken over the power play, and it's been quite good. It's been middle of the pack, and it's top 10 at home. And Marty Ramon is the assistant coach that runs the penalty kill, and he's taken quite a bit of heat because it has been pretty bad for quite a long time. And in the last, well, really since the beginning of December, it's actually been quite good. And so it's unfortunate. I guess it's just the way of this business, but Marty Ramon hasn't received nearly as much praise for the improvement in the penalty kill as he did when it was lousy. So, but there's no question right now they're playing on the penalty kill about as well as they've played all year.
You know, Dean, Sens owner Eugene Melnyk earlier this week said he's committed to building a winner in Ottawa and talked about how he wants to spend to the cap and how they have this 5-year plan. What was the response to his comments from the fan base there in Ottawa?
Well, for some people, it was, you know, you can never say that there's the one response. This is how the fans respond. There's always, on almost any question, in almost any city, there's fragmented groups that are in certain groups, and it's a, you know, kind of a joint perspective within those groups. There are some people who said, well, yeah, he's kind of intimated that many times, nothing new, nothing to see here, move on. There's other people who are, well, I'll believe it when I see it. You know, they have a lot of mistrust with ownership here in Ottawa, and they only believe things when they see them happen, not when they hear about they're supposed to happen. And there's another group of people who are kind of in the idea that, well, if you're willing to spend the cap starting in 2021 when this team matures, why don't you spend a little bit more right now and try and help those young guys along quicker? So, you know, there's never one perspective about how people react to ownership in almost any sport. You know, it's in any professional sport. There's almost always within the fan base, a few different streams, a few different threads of opinion that kind of float to the top. But I've never, ever seen with almost anything any owner has ever said about anything, there be one consensus about what that means or what that is. So I guess it all depends on what group you're in There's the vocal and the angries that are vocal and angry about almost everything, so they will be vocal and angry about this. And there's others who, to be honest with you, don't really care. They go to the games, and if they're entertained, they'll come back, and it's your job to build the team and just tell me who's playing. And so you always have different levels of engagement when it comes to that. So I think those would probably be the three big streams of opinion as far as the fan base goes. But again, there's never one voice for the entire fan base in almost any topic.
Dean, I wanted to ask you about Thomas Chabot. I mean, this is a guy that's having an excellent second year, and we know his pedigree. He was an excellent defenseman for the St. John Sea Dogs, and he was the MVP of the World Junior Tournament. And you know, he's obviously got the 11 goals and the 42 points, but you watch him on a nightly basis. Do you think he's getting enough credit league-wide for how well he's played this year for the Senators? Because he's playing big minutes, 25, 27 minutes a game.
Yeah, I think the praise that he's getting is about right. You know, but when we go into different cities and the other, you know, reporters or broadcasters come and ask you to, you know, to try and fill in the blanks when you're talking with people, nobody ever says, what's about this Chabot kid? Like, they know who he is. They know what he can do. And he does get a lot of praise already, you know, but he is a player right now. You know, since he was 15, don't think anybody ever questioned whether he was going to be an NHLer or not, and I don't think anybody ever really questioned whether he was going to be an elite offensive defenseman, and he is both. And now that he's in the NHL, he is already, you know, as far as puck skills go, he's already one of the elite guys in the league. The irony is that right now, you know, on a point-per-game basis, he's exactly the same as Erik Karlsson is. So, you know, the guy that I'm not saying he's replaced Erik Karlsson, but the extra minutes he's gotten are ones that were left by Erik Karlsson when he left, and they have the same point-per-game numbers. So clearly he's a very good offensive player. All he needs to do, and he's getting the time to do it here, all he needs to do to kind of get over time into that conversation about the best defenseman in the league is he just needs to be allowed to grow. You know, he's just turned 21 years old, and probably the biggest thing for Thomas is not that he can't play defense, it's just not as easy to play defense because he doesn't have his man strength yet. He's 21 years old, and most of the issues that he has are defensive ones, and it's not because he can't figure out how to play defense or doesn't want to or is uncoachable. It's just the fact that he is tall and he's not, you know, doesn't have his man strength yet. So he knows how to pin a guy in the corner. He just can't keep he can't keep Blake Wheeler pinned in the corner if Blake Wheeler doesn't want to be there. When he's in front of the net, he knows that he has to twist guys. He just isn't strong enough to twist them yet. He knows he's got to box guys out and how to do it. He just can't box out, you know, veteran NHL guys who have man strength. So he knows what to do, and he's working on doing it. He's finding new ways to try and do it until he gets his man strength. But he just needs to be given the time to grow as an individual and get stronger. And when he does, he's going to be, I tell people all the time, I said, I can't even imagine how good this guy's going to be in 3 years. Because what is usually the hard part of the game, which is to find your offensive voice in this game as a defenseman and be allowed to do it, he's already found it. He's already established as one of the best offensive defensemen in the NHL. And now he's working on the other part. But again, he just has to be given the time for it to happen properly and naturally, which is, you know, when he physically matures.
Last question for you, Dean, and we always appreciate your time and insight. Brady Tkachuk is obviously having a very impressive rookie season for the Ottawa Senators, 25 points in his first 43 games as a member of as an NHL player. But, you know, how have you seen his games maybe develop over the course of the year as he gets more accustomed to playing in the NHL?
I think probably the single biggest thing with Brady, to be honest with you, isn't even the points. And you know, they're good. He's had a very good rookie season points-wise. But the attitude that he brings to the rink, and he's a very joyful, fun kid. And that is very, very evident whenever you meet him, no matter who you are. If you meet him for 5 minutes, you know what kind of a kid he is. And that's brought, you know, a great deal of a spark to the locker room, believe it or not, for a 19-year-old kid. But the other thing is, he's really started to develop who he is as a player. And who he is as a player has nothing to do with stats and has everything to do with attitude. He is like a throwback player in that in today's game, there's not many kids like him. He wants to be in front of the net. He wants it to be rough. He wants it to be ugly. He wants every goaltender to hate him. He wants it to be truculent. And he smiles and loves that part of the game. He doesn't mind taking a pop in the face, but he's going to give one back, and he wants the game to be that way. And nowadays, even though being in front of the net is not nearly as dangerous as it was 15 years ago, there's still not a lot of people who want to go and spend time there, because if there are going to be things that happen that are untoward in this game, that's generally where they'll happen. So I think the big thing with him is that he is not by any means a perimeter player. He is in the mosh pit every second he can get there. He is in the trough, you know, snorting around looking for whatever as much as he can, and he wants goaltenders and he wants defensemen to hate him, and he wants them to come after him. That's what he wants. And so to watch that attitude and that game develop and grow is, to be honest with you, for an old fat guy like me, very exciting, because there's so few players now who play the game that way, where they challenge people to play against them. Not just, I swing my stick, you swing yours. Challenge people to physically deal with him all night long. And that's I think a great quality to have at 19 years old, because same as Shabbat, when he gets his man strength and he's strong, he's already 6'4" and 200 pounds. But when he's 6'4" and 225, best of luck dealing with him then, because he brings an attitude and a style that is very difficult to deal with, and he's very good at it. And most importantly, no one has to get him to do it. He loves doing it that way. He loves being in the mosh pit.
Dean Brown is the Ottawa Senators play-by-play broadcaster. He'll have the call of the Jets and the Senators at 1 o'clock this afternoon.
And by the way, Dean, from one fat guy to another, happy National Pizza Day today.
It's National Pizza Day?
It is.
I thought it was also National Bagel Day is what my wife told me.
That's fantastic. Pizza.
That can be your post-game snack, Dean.
Oh, or in-game. Who knows?
Or both.
Yeah. Thank you, Dean. Have a great call this afternoon.
All right, thanks, boys.
Take care.
As always.
When we come back, for the second year in a row, the Minnesota Wild have lost a key member of their team in the heart of the playoff race. We talk about the impact of the Mikko Koivu injury and where do the Wild go from here. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Surprising and disappointing to hear yesterday. But, you know, it's one of those things that we have no choice. It's going to be a good opportunity for some guys to step up and get some more minutes.
It's a blow to the organization. It's a blow to him. Obviously, we all want the best to happen for him and hopefully a speedy recovery.
A lamentable situation in Minnesota. They lose Mikko Koivu for the remainder of the season. Obviously not the news the Wild wanted to hear after he got tangled up and went down in the game earlier this week. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
I'm following Frank. He's in France right now.
I noticed that. Yeah. He seems to be having quite the French adventure there.
Yeah.
It looks like a nice trip he's having.
Absolutely.
Nice little trip.
Yeah.
Yeah. You went to Phoenix. He went to France.
It's about almost the same thing.
About the same thing.
Different. It wasn't warm in Phoenix, I was telling you.
As I said to Ezzy when he tried to use that line on me, I said, Ez, my heart bleeds for you.
Yeah, you're really not. You're breaking
like,
up the wrong
anything above zero.
Creator.
He's like, well, it was only 2 degrees. I was like, Ez. It's like minus 100 here.
Yeah.
And it snowed. It's not just annoying because we have to deal with the cold, which I could deal with.
Now,
I don't care about the cold.
The question is, did you and Rick Ralph hang out together? Because Rick is also in Arizona.
No, there's the restraining order, remember?
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. The restraining order.
I can't go within 200 feet.
Yeah. So, I think you have to actually be 3 states over from Rick at all times, as well. But anyways, yes. And welcome back from your trip. Glad to see that you're here on this Saturday morning, just shortly before 8:30. So the Minnesota Wild.
And to think that I purposely came back late last night so I wouldn't miss the show.
You have dedication that I must say.
I don't know what the hell I was thinking, but.
Well, you know, you have dedication. That's good. Minnesota Wild currently reside in the first wild card spot. They're 2 points up on both the St. Louis Blues, who are in the second wild card spot, and the Vancouver Canucks. The Blues have 2 games in hand on the Wild. The Wild have 1 game in hand on the Canucks. Where do the Wild go from here? I mean, I guess they've always been a playoff team so far this season, but they've never really been a contender or a threat or anything other than one of those.
A little run.
Yeah, but nobody's ever really thought that this is a Wild team that can go into Winnipeg or can go into Nashville in the first round of the playoffs and knock either of those two teams off.
No.
And right now, you lose Mikko Koivu, who obviously is not the same player he once was, but he's still a huge component of that team. So what do the Wild do at this point in time? Do they become sellers at the trade deadline? Do they just sort of stand pat and say, if they make the playoffs, great, we'll, you know, and then we'll be first-round fodder? Like, how does Paul Fenton, rookie general manager, albeit with a lot of assistant general manager experience, how does he handle this delicate situation in Minnesota?
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned it's delicate, and it was delicate before Mikko Koivu went down with the injury, and you mentioned that, you know, Koivu, he's older now, and you know, maybe he's not the same offensive player, but you know, ask any of the Jets centers guys, and the Jets have lost, of course, a couple of times to the Wild this year.
Yeah.
Mikko Koivu is one of the best defensive forwards in the entire game.
He's just a very smart hockey player.
Right. And, you know, it's amazing because I remember, you know, when Saku Koivu and Mikko Koivu were both in the league, it was kind of like Mikko was always in Saku's kind of shadow. And I think Mikko's turned out to be a better all-around player than Saku Koivu. Maybe he's never going to be the better offensive player, but this is a huge part of the team. And maybe with the exception of Ryan Suter, this is the one player you don't want to lose for the whole season. So, you're right. They're in a playoff spot right now, and you know they're competing for that last wild card spot, and it's going to be tough because the St. Louis Blues are surging right now. And you know, I saw that you guys had Lou Korak on the Wednesday show, and I'm glad you did because this Blues team I think has been one of the best stories in the league. I think the Islanders are right up there as well with the Habs, but you know this Blues team was kind of languishing, and you know the Blues are now right in there with the Wild and with the Colorado Avalanche. And to get back to your question, though, Drew, when you're Paul Fenton, rookie GM, as you mentioned, best case scenario, I mean, the Wild squeak into the playoffs and I think lose in the first round.
Yeah, they lose in five games again,
and maybe Devan Dubnyk, you know, steals a couple of games, but you know, this Wild team, I think, just doesn't have enough offensive firepower. It's still a good defensive team. I mean, I still really like that group of defensemen. I mean, we know how good Ryan Suter is. I mean, he's been a top 20 defenseman in the NHL for a long time. And, you know, obviously, you know, the Matt Dumba injury has hurt them. But,
yeah, they lost Dumba for the entire year
right?
as well.
But, so, I mean, it's just...
Do you trade Eric Staal?
I think you have to be you have to, at least if you're Paul Fenton, consider being a seller right now. And I don't think that prior to this injury he was considering that. I think he was considering maybe standing pat.
Yeah.
I don't think they were necessarily going to be a buyer, but I think you have to now consider being a seller because they had the trade earlier in the season, right, with the Hurricanes.
Yeah.
And you know, that shook up the roster a little bit.
Need a rider for Victor Rask, who they acquired.
Right. And you know, Victor Rask hasn't exactly, you know, lit it up for them, but I don't think that was necessarily going to change their fortunes. Like, I don't think, you know, swapping Victor Rask for Nino Niederreiter is going to do much. I think Nino Niederreiter is quite frankly a better player than Victor Rask, but I think you have to consider, don't you, Drew? If you're Minnesota now without Mikko Koivu, without Matt Dumba, even if you squeak in, I mean, who can you add that's going to put you over the top
and
beat a team like the Jets or the Preds?
You have among their forward group, you know, they have three unrestricted free agents: Eric Staal, who will still get you something on the trade market; Eric Fair and Matt Hendricks are, of course, just really depth guys at this point in their career. If you're the Wild, you have to try and acquire somebody for Eric Staal, I think. I mean, he's not having as good of a year as he had last year, and so the timing really is sort of unfortunate for the Wild, because if he was a pending unrestricted free agent last season, he would have, you know, got a pretty significant return.
I think if you can get a late first rounder or an early second rounder for Staal, you take it.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you know, you're in the dreaded middle. You're not good enough to be a serious contender. Even when fully healthy, I should add. Mm. Now that you're not fully healthy, you're not bad enough to be a bottom feeder. So you're just stuck in that mushy middle. You might sneak into the playoffs, but ultimately, anybody who plays the Wild in the first round is looking at that as a very appetizing matchup.
Right.
You know, go ahead, Dave.
And we talked about this last week about the Ducks. Remember the idea of teams getting in, and we were being a little dismissive of you. But the fact of the matter is that I think it's a function of, you got to also remember the playoff gate, which obviously drives a lot of ownership's decision making, but also the idea of, you know, for the Wild, they don't have a fourth round pick or a fifth round pick in this year's draft. So you might want to augment some things, because I think, to your point, Drew, you have to, as a GM, evaluate what your team is and what it isn't. And I think at this point, it's pretty clear what the Wild are. And so I think if you can trade pieces that are UFAs this year, or even maybe something else, you never know, to maybe sweeten the pot, you kind of have to retool. I don't think you obviously, especially with some of the veterans on this team, you're going for a complete rebuild like a city like Ottawa, for example. But you have to do something that makes you a dangerous team to compete against in the Central Division. And right now, that's not the Wild.
It's about the future, guys. I mean, Joel Eriksson Ek is going to be elevated now, right, with Mikko Koivu out of the lineup. You know, Luke Cunnan is a former first-round pick. He's up with the Wild right now. It's time to see, you know, Jordan Greenway. He's in his second year. It's time to, you know, give the young guys a chance because this Wild team just, quite frankly, isn't good enough. And sure, they've beat the Jets twice this year, as I mentioned, but this team just isn't good enough to compete with the big boys, and the Koivu and Dumba injuries just kill them.
When we come back, Stephen Wino of the Associated Press joins us. We'll look at the Eastern Conference playoff race, look around the NHL as a whole with Stephen. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.